Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden and I'm here with co-host Jeff Patino.
Good morning.
And we're the guys that work at the Binary Research Institute that check out this ancient belief that history moves in a vast cycle of time with alternating dark and golden ages, something that Plato called the Great Year. And as part of this process, we interview people that can speak to the age of ancient cultures, that talk about the possible physical effects that might drive this cycle, people that study the character of consciousness in different ages, and every possible way we can to understand this cycle. And today we have a very interesting guest. His name is Marvin H. Mills, and he's an architect and a scholar. And Jeff, can you give us a little background on Marvin?
Sure. Marvin Mills is an architect, architectural historian, and professor of history of architecture. He has advanced degrees from Columbia University in philosophy, architecture, and history of architecture. And he has recently taught at the University of South Florida in Tampa and at New College in Sarasota. He lives with his wife in Sarasota, where he teaches the course Asian Art and Architecture at the Pierian Spring Academy.
Excellent. And he just recently wrote this book called The Origin of the Mosque of Cordoba, Secrets of Andalusia. And it's fascinated me because it questions the date of this very famous mosque in Spain. And I think it makes a convincing case that it predates the Islamic era. And so with that, Marvin, you on the line there?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Excellent. Okay, your voice is loud and clear. And Jeff gave a little bit about your background, but can you tell us how you got interested in this whole area in the first place?
Yes, my interest expanded from being an architect to studying history of architecture and teaching it. And then I realized that there was much to be learned by studying Eastern as well as Western architecture, and I concentrated on Islamic architecture, only to find that there are certain things about Islamic architecture that really need a much more profound study and perhaps revision. So my interest moved on to Spain, and I concentrated on its perhaps most important or second most important Islamic monument from the Middle Ages, that is the Mosque of Cordoba.
And what is the traditional dating of the Mosque of Cordoba?
The traditional dating is 785 to 786 A.D.
Okay. And so this was just a brief bit of history then, within 100 years of the so-called Islamic invasion or settlement of this part of Spain. Is that correct?
Yes, because they first arrived in 711 A.D., and then the Umayyads arrived in 756 A.D. from Africa, and in that short span of some 30 years, were able to arrive at the point where allegedly they could build the Mosque of Cordoba.
Got it. And, of course, this was a time in Europe and throughout the world that, Rome had fallen some time ago. The world was in the midst of the Dark Ages, and it was not a lot was going on. Now, tell us then sort of your overall perspective of the book here.
The perspective of the book is that it's, if I may say so, quite important, even if not true, and that it delves deeply into a problem that has been rather taken for granted. That is the type of criteria that we apply to the physical sciences, in which we demand evidence and laboratory experiment and all of that. When it comes to questions of history, quite often we let that go by, and what begins to happen is that there are great pundits, historians of ancient years who are accepted, and then new works are built on them, and the whole thing pyramids, until there is no questioning. But it's a house of cards in some cases, I think in this case, and I think eventually it'll tumble down.
Yeah, well, it's often the case in scholarship today that research is built on research, which is built on research, and it only works if the first research is pretty darn accurate. So, yeah, we do need a lot more original research nowadays. That's for sure. But why then are the wide belief here is that this is a mosque that was built by Islam in the Dark Ages, and of course it's a very architecturally impressive building. And why do you have a hard time believing that, I guess?
Well, for various reasons.
Or why are the previous analyses incorrect? Maybe it's a better way to put it.
They're incorrect because they should have questioned certain things which they never really questioned. First of all, there's the question of its orientation. Now, you know that for a mosque, it has very few basic requirements, and that the main requirement is that it face Mecca.
Mm-hmm.
That when the Muslims pray inside the mosque, they are facing the Kaaba in Mecca.
That's what we've all been taught, right.
And yet, when you get to this building, it turns out that it doesn't face Mecca at all, and it's about 50 degrees off from Mecca. So it could not just be a construction error.
Okay, so
that should have been questioned by scholars all along.
All right.
Very few of them even mention it or even know about it.
Then just to dig into that point, so Spain, of course, is somewhat north and very west of Mecca, and you say it's about 50 degrees off?
Yes, because Mecca is
substantial.
Pretty much east of Spain.
Right.
And the building orients 60 degrees south of,
right.
60 degrees south of east, so that there's a difference of about 45, 50 degrees. So obviously it was not ever intended to face Mecca.
Okay.
Now at that time, 8th century, they very well knew how to make buildings this way, and they were very much concerned that their buildings do face Mecca.
Yes, yes.
So that should have been the first reason that scholars should have said, hey, maybe we better take a closer look at this.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't.
Okay. Tell us a little bit, I know there's some other issues here too, but tell us a little bit, sort of an overview of the land where this mosque lies and why this mosque is famous, and then we'll get into some of the particulars about it.
Okay. Well, in general, it's in Andalusia, which is the southern portion of Spain. It's on the banks of a river called the Guadalquivir. And if one travels up from Cadiz on the Atlantic, one comes up the Guadalquivir and after a while arrives at Cordoba, on the banks of the Guadalquivir.
Okay. So it was on the banks of a river.
Yes.
And still is, of course. And I understand, too, that there's an old Roman bridge there that substantially predates the mosque.
Yes. Or allegedly does.
Allegedly. Okay. That's a good point. Of course, the Romans were in Spain far earlier than than Islam. And so that I guess that dating differential would be roughly, what, close to 1,000 years, something like that?
Well, no, not quite, because the Romans are there for about 500 years.
Oh, so the Romans didn't get there till about 200 A.D.?
Yeah, it's about 200 A.D., because after them there are the Visigoths, and they precede then Islam.
Got it. Okay. So, and you had made the point in your book that this bridge, they wouldn't just build a bridge sort of to nowhere, that there must have been something substantial there before they built the bridge.
I would think so.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I thought that was one of the most interesting pieces of evidence. But anyway, let's go on with why these previous analysis are incorrect. Who is Al Razi?
Oh, well, this is an important name in the whole thing. You see, you would ask, wasn't somebody around in 785 to describe the construction? And the answer is no. There's no written account of a 8th century construction of a mosque in Cordoba. So what's the earliest? The earliest is 10th century by Al-Razi, who wrote and described the construction of the mosque. That's the evidence. It's 200 years later.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's where all of this pyramid begins, the work of Al-Razi.
So it's 200 years later that he claims it was built by Islam.
Yes.
And that it was built in a very, very short period of time, too.
Well, that's the other thing that scholars shouldn't. If they had, instead of having this painterly, what I call a painterly attitude towards the way things look, and instead ask themselves, how much time does it take to build these things? The story is that by some scholars it takes 1 year, and some it says it takes two. But there are a few scholars that point out that it really needed 15 years to do their first stage. And that is true. If there was a first stage, it would have taken about 15 years. So 1 year, 785, 786, it's just out of the question, and yet that's kept brought up over and over again.
Okay. So part of your hypothesis here is that it predates Islam by many, many years.
Yeah.
And you point to a Phoenician origin.
That's right.
Now, how do you get there?
Well, I got there in a backward manner. I wasn't looking for the Phoenicians at first. At first, I analyzed the Muslim provenance, and I felt that this was highly unlikely for various reasons, which I'll enumerate if you ask me to. And then I asked myself, I said, I cannot write a book without then suggesting if it was not Muslim, then what in the world was it? And I began to analyze the other occupants of Spain, Visigoths and Romans and other peoples, to see who could have been likely perpetrators. And I realized that it has to go back to at least the Phoenicians to get a reasonable answer. That's how I got there.
Okay. And what is the evidence or folklore of the Phoenicians in Spain? Is there's some other sources that talk about this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's quite well agreed that the Phoenicians were in Spain, that they were there from at least the 9th century B.C. when they founded Cadiz, which became the biggest city in Europe for a while. And they were there because the Phoenicians, which is now, of course, Lebanon, were great traders. And they were technically fairly advanced and artistically advanced. And their ships went to Spain because there were metals in Spain. And that's where they could get the copper and the tin and the iron and gold and so forth. And, of course, they also went to Cornwall in England for tin. And some writers have said, with some conviction, I think, that they were in the New World. So there's much that has been written about the Phoenicians in Spain.
Yes. Okay, so just a little background then for our listeners that might not be aware of that era of history. The Phoenicians predate the Romans by at least 1,000 years, and I guess they are thought to have originated in the area that is now around Beirut, Lebanon. Is that correct, Marvin?
Yes, yes. And on the coast, towns called Byblos, Tyre, Beirut, yes.
And they peak something like, 1300, 1500 B.C.?
Oh, well, they were there a long time. the way that it's written about is that it was known as Canaan before 1200 B.C. and known as Phoenicia after that, after the Sea Peoples. This is a very complex history of Phoenicia. But they probably peaked, I would guess, around the time that they came to Spain.
Okay. And so what is the specific evidence, then, that you relate the Mosque of Cordoba to the Phoenicians, as well as, I guess, Medina Azahara?
Yes.
And Alhambra?
Yes. Well, this is quite important, and it has to do with historiography. How does one know today how old the building is? You can delve into any number of books, but sometimes there's a really good shortcut, and that's called scientific dating, carbon-14 dating, thermoluminescence, and so forth.
Okay.
But in order for this to happen, somebody has to be interested in having it happen, and somebody has to recognize that maybe we could learn something new from being exact about how old it is. So you would think that scholars would get off their chairs and go there, take a few samples, and have them dated, just to be sure. This does not happen. There's only one person in the world that I know of who has dated the Mosque of Cordoba, and that's myself. And when I was there last, about 1991, I took five samples of wood for carbon-14 dating.
Well, let me slow you down right there. So there was no difficulty getting approval?
No, at that time there was no difficulty because no one knew what I was up to.
Okay.
You know, the government was very cooperative, and the people at the mosque, which is now a cathedral and a museum, were very helpful and even loaned me workers and gave me approval.
Okay, so you went in, you were able to get some core samples from various old rafters.
Well, that's right. I don't know if you know the cordless drill.
Mm-hmm.
It came out about then. The Makita was, I think, one of the first. And I realized if I could take that drill and up to a place where there is no socket, no electricity, I could take core samples of beams, which I did. And I went to five different places and took five different samples and had them dated. Now, one of those dates turned out to be 800 B.C.
800 B.C., so that's about...
That's a Phoenician date.
That's almost 1,600 years before the date at which this mosque was supposedly built.
That's right, much more ancient.
So either they were using really, really, really old wood that was lying around, which is pretty doubtful.
Well, if you were there and had to drill into it, you realize it's like drilling into stone. Now, when you have really old wood, you don't build with it.
Okay.
It's petrified.
Good point. Yeah. Okay, so that is that's a fascinating find. And where was this particular sample taken from in the...
Well, up on the roof, you're able to gain access to the ceiling beams.
Okay.
And they're exposed. And I chose a suitable place and proceeded to go to work.
Got it. But some of the...
Caveat... I paid for these myself, and I couldn't take too many. So that one does not really solve the problem.
Right, that's what I want to get into. You had some other samples, too, that
there are other samples.
Later dates.
Yeah, different dates. The dates were sprinkled around of all kinds of dates.
Huh.
Because a building, in my view, that's really that old, it goes through fires, it goes through earthquakes, all kinds of things happen to it in its lifetime. And I saw that you're not always dealing with the original building.
Right. And
but there should not be a Phoenician date there.
Right.
And unless the sample is somehow ruined or the lab is not is wrong, which is not likely, it's a very reliable laboratory, it's a piece of evidence that should have been picked up by the scholars and said, look, I'm going to try to replicate this.
Yeah, of course, they didn't have a real reason to look. But anyway, I want to get more into that, but we're going to take a short break.
Okay.
You're listening to Cosmic Influence, and our special guest today, Marvin Mills, who is the author of The Mosque of Cordova. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. We're talking with Marvin Mills. Marvin, the carbon dating suggests a date earlier than 785, but there's also some other evidence that you point to in your book.
Yes.
Can you get into some of that, please?
Oh, sure. If you look at how mosques are designed, if you were an architect that had to design a mosque, you would make sure that it was either square or that it was elongated on the broad way, not in a long way, because the imam who is in front has to be, the faithful have to group around him. What I'm saying is that you never have an elongated front-to-back mosque because it's not practical from the viewpoint of the religion. Now, this mosque went through allegedly four stages. The first three stages resulting in a very elongated building, which is not likely.
Okay, so the very architecture of the building suggests then that it was built originally for a different purpose than
right.
a mosque.
That's right.
All right. And what purpose is that, in your opinion?
In my book, I speculate, and I feel I'm allowed to speculate, since there's so much speculation having preceded me, that the Phoenicians built it as a warehouse and as a place of worship, as a observatory, and as a perhaps a signaling tower.
Okay, so it's a multi-purpose building of some kind.
Yeah, multi-purpose building.
Okay.
Now, of interest too is the fact that this building is on two levels. I was down in the lower level. Now, mosques don't have lower levels. They're not like cathedrals. There's no lower level. There's no reason for it.
Ah.
But there were actually rooms below the floor. And I don't know the extent of it. And if I get back to Spain, one of the things I'll look for is to discover how wide this lower level is. But my view is that as a warehouse, it could have held the metals that were brought up the river or brought down the river, whatever, and stored there on the lower levels, and that the upper levels for grain and wheat and things like that, and that between the two levels there could have been aeration with grills so that the grains would be kept dry.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, I understand there's actually a couple different Islamic histories about it. One that we talked about is that it was built de novo in 785-786. But there's another story that says that there was a pre-existing church there, St. Vincent's.
Yes.
Isn't that correct?
Yes. Most of the stories deal with a tearing down of a pre-existing church and a pre-existing Roman temple.
Okay, so there is some admittance then that there is a earlier structure.
The consensus at the moment is there was. I'm not satisfied with there. I think that what was going on is that there was, the Mosque of Cordova was then the Phoenician warehouse, that it, when it was taken over by the Visigoths, or by the Romans even, that it was used, that part of it was used as a cathedral, the way it is now. And that part of it was in other words, the building needed repairs, it needed modifications, and that part of it was used for that purpose. That's the famous church that they found.
Okay. Okay.
But there's no evidence that they really found that there existed such a church.
Okay, and then I guess part of your argument is that even if there was a church, the carbon dates suggest that it predates Christianity.
Yes.
By quite a margin.
And even predates the Romans.
Interesting. Okay.
Now, there are other indications this is not a Muslim building.
Okay.
I want to point out that, for example, the minaret. The minaret is about 200 feet high, the original minaret. What one sees nowadays is the remains of the minaret encased with a Renaissance jacket with a cover that was built during the Renaissance, 16th century. But the original minaret they know, or they call minaret, I call it a tower, was about 200 feet high. The problem with that is the call to prayer by Muslims is by voice. If you're up 200 feet, you don't reach anybody by voice. You certainly don't reach the town. It's too high.
Oh.
It's not practical.
So it's more suited to a lookout tower than a...
That's right. Than a, or to observation, to astronomical observation.
Hmm.
How do we know that it was originally 200 feet high?
That's a good question, but they know what it has now. It goes up to, I forget, 160 feet or so. And they know that how these things looked, and they know that if it was had been finished, it would have been about 200 feet high.
Okay. Now, you said observatory, so you think it might have been used for astronomical purposes originally?
I think it could have been. I have no idea. That's just a guess.
Okay. Great. Part of your book, too, you speculate about even earlier cultures than the Phoenicians, the Tartesians, et cetera. Can you speak to that a little bit?
The problem with saying the Phoenicians built it is that even though we have very little evidence of Phoenician architecture, we have a general idea of what they built and how they built. Some of this idea comes from stone plaques that were left over from the Assyrian Empire. And it doesn't seem to be the style that you look at, these gorgeous arches, and don't seem to resemble anything that's Phoenician, nor do they resemble Roman, nor Muslim, for that matter.
Okay.
They are unique. So the question is, where did they get this from? And this is when I began to question that maybe they learned it from somebody else. And that somebody else were people that we know were there before the Phoenicians, the Tartessians, Tartessos. And that these were people in my book, which I boldly and fatally call people from Atlantis.
Okay. And that's a subject I want to get into in a little more detail. Well, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to The Cosmic Influence with our guest today, Marvin Mills. Marvin is the author of The Mosque, The Origin of the Mosque of Cordoba, and we will be right back. Okay, Marvin, you mentioned the A word right before Atlantis, and that's something I want to talk to you about. But first, we're sort of peeling the onion here, going back in time, and you mentioned the Tartesians. Can you give us a quick little history lesson on what we know about this culture?
Well, we know that in Spain that there were settlements of people, which we know this from the Bible, that they were generally referred to as the Tartesians. I call them Tartessians, I suppose that's the wrong pronunciation. And that they prospered, and that they dealt with the Phoenicians, and that they were there.
And their geographic locale was from where to where, roughly?
Oh, also in Andalusia.
Okay, just in that one area of Spain?
Yes.
Okay. And what were the approximate dates then?
Well, that I don't know. And nobody knows this sort of thing, you know, just how far back. But I'd say they were there when the Phoenicians arrived. The Phoenicians arriving, say, about 1,000 B.C. I'd say the Tartessians had been there already, maybe from 2,000 B.C. But at some point, having studied about Atlantis, I feel there was a worldwide civilization and that there was worldwide trade and that the influence of this earlier civilization was there physically in Spain.
Yeah, we've had many authors on this show, and we've gotten into little tidbits of that topic. And, of course, we just don't have very exact histories because subsequent cultures tend to, rename everything and wipe out the old and put their imprint on it. But what sort of leads you then to a belief in Atlantis and this idea that of a worldwide culture?
Well, for this, there's all kinds of answers. When one assumes the Atlantis, a great many things fall into place that otherwise don't fall into place. There are certain, as you know, getting away from Spain, if you get to a place like Egypt, the kind of work that Shock and West did,
right,
on the Sphinx and on the pyramids, what people have done, that there must have been some earlier civilization that brought knowledge and science and technology to people that didn't have them earlier, and that only this can account for these marvelous constructions.
Right, both Shock and West and Bovall and many others now point out that Egypt seems to be at its height very near the beginning with incredible structures. And then things almost get gaudy as we get into the later dynasties. And then, of course, things totally collapse and it becomes almost a nomadic lifestyle in the area by the time you reach the Dark Ages. So it seems to go backwards prior to the Dark Ages.
Average person, as you point out, and as you did in your introduction, can't imagine that things start at the top sometimes, that you're going not linearly forward, but that you are actually reaching heights at an earlier period. And that's what happens in Spain. I feel that they reached a height that enabled the knowledge brought by the Tartessians to Spain for the Phoenicians to have built these buildings.
Okay, and that then, like so many other cultures, that there was a renaming or a reclaiming of this very impressive building by Islam when they came in, correct?
Right.
Okay. Well, tell us, a little bit more about some of this building here. Comment on the arches and the columns.
Well, what it's known for, the building on the outside is relatively plain, although that has areas of great elaboration and color. But inside is where its real glory takes off, because there's a very unique construction attributed truthfully to the mosque, and that is that there's a sea of columns that hold up the roof. And each bay is made up of four columns, let's say, with double arches, in which the bottom arches are horseshoe-shaped. The arch above it is semicircle. And that this doubling of the arches enables the ceiling to go up like 38 feet. Now, these arches are made of alternating voussoirs, the pie shapes of the arches, made up of alternating stone and brick, red and white.
Oh, yes, I've seen that in a lot of pictures.
And that's only the beginning, because when you get around the front of the mosque, the mihrab, you then have an area that was devoted to something special called the maksura, which in the Muslim period became the royalty section. And there the arches are interlaced arches made up of lobes, and very beautiful, very unusual. Mind you, you're talking only 30 years after they've landed, after the Umayyads have landed in Spain, and they've come up with this most glorious building with its glorious arches and the cupola above them.
And is there anything of this architectural magnificence that predates Cordoba that we find in the African continent?
Not really. That's the problem. At first I thought the Romans did this, because the Romans have been known to make their aqueducts and bridges with multiple arches.
Right.
But they never used the horseshoe arch, or almost never. And they never use this this colorful type of treatment of it. It's just not Roman. When the Romans did, they were an empire, of course, and they built Roman. Wherever they went, it was Roman. They didn't pick up, say, on local characteristics and give way to it and so forth. They spread the empire's symbolism. This is not the way they would have built. So I had to discard the idea of a Roman origin for this thing.
Okay.
So there really isn't, until then, there's no precedent for this. And in the cupola, they have these interlaced arches, which has created the greatest cupola considered by some anywhere. And there it is so early in the whole development of the Muslim world.
Good. Well, I really want to see it someday after reading your book.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I will get there.
There are a lot of other, I don't know if we're running out of time, but there are other things to consider.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Cosmic Influence, and we'll be right back with Marvin Mills, author of The Mosque of Cordoba. We're back with Marvin Mills, author of The Origin of the Mosque of Cordoba. And Marvin, you had mentioned that procession might be something that the culture that built the mosque was aware of. Can you describe that?
The minaret has been judged to have 107 steps or 108 landings. Now, you folks know that 108 is an important number in the precession of the equinoxes.
And throughout the Vedic culture.
Yes, and all over the world there's been the number 108 and 72 keep popping up. 72 and then half of 72, 36 to create 108. And that this number is incorporated into many buildings. So that I would ask other scholars to look into the question of the steps and why there are 108 landings, and to be sure there are 108 to reaffirm that. But I'd like to bring that up because it ties into what your Binary Research Institute is doing.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to hear more about that. We'll try to research that a little bit independently if we can. You had made a special... Well, go ahead.
A very prosaic point. This whole thing, which is now a rectangle that's about 1,000 feet long or 800 feet wide, just roughly, is made up of four stages. All scholars agree, except me, because I think it was done at once. And one reason I think that is I went around the building and carefully sought out where one stage began and the other ended. Now, if you know about buildings, masonry buildings, when masonry ends and begins again, there's a joint.
Okay, that makes sense.
You have to do something. You have to have a joint between the two. If you don't have a joint, you have to then tear down the masonry and interlock the different stones. And there's no evidence of it having been torn down and rebuilt that way. Nor is there any evidence of joints. In other words, where the two stages come together, there's no evidence in terms of joints that this was done.
Well, would there normally be a discoloration or
a
different...
Too.
Different quality of mortar.
You would see that this is, you know, especially if it's years and years apart from one stage to the next, you would find some discontinuity. You see none.
Interesting. Tell us, what is a mihrab?
Okay. The mihrab is essential to all mosques. The mihrab is like the central altar. It's a niche in the wall that faces Mecca.
Okay.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned it because this is also very important. There are always niches. There's nothing in the niche. It's a sacred area that's devoted to Allah, but is not allowed to have anything else in it. So it's shallow, except for the Mosque of Cordoba, which is a room. It's a room about 8 foot in diameter. It's about eight-sided, and it's not... At that time, there was no mosque in the world built that way.
Okay, so again, it's a very incongruent with traditional mosque architecture.
That's right.
Okay. I imagine that some Islamic scholars might not be too crazy about hearing about your research here.
Absolutely. I don't exist.
Have you had any feedback on it at all, or maybe they're not aware?
Only from friends. Okay. I've had some. There was one PhD scholar in England who didn't know he was not supposed to like this kind of stuff, and he was thrilled by it. And he published attributing great insights to me.
Yeah.
But outside of that one poor fellow who probably lost his career because of that, that's the only one I know of. People who are not in the field are generally more receptive.
Yeah, well, it's an excellent bit of scholarship. I mean, you've really covered the whole gamut from the mortars and the architecture to the placement of the building and its direction and you know, just the whole thing, and I applaud your work.
Thank you very much. I really love to hear that sort of thing.
Yeah. So any final thoughts you want to leave us here? We're just about...
Yes. I want to leave you with this thought. We've only talked about this one building. I haven't talked about the other two buildings, the complexes, the Alhambra and Medina Zahara. We have no time. Nor have I talked about the general problem of the history of Muslim architecture in the world. And as I briefly mentioned in my book, the Taj Mahal is a whole story in itself. The Taj Mahal is not Muslim. And it's ridiculous to keep talking about it as if it were. And one day you can interview me and we'll go through the whole story.
Okay, well, we'll be looking for your book then on the Taj Mahal in the not-too-distant future. Great. Well, thanks so much for being on the show, Marvin.
I enjoyed it.
We hope to have you back someday.
Very nice of you to invite me. I appreciate it.
Okay. All the best to you.
Thank you.
You listen to the Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. Marvin really did a nice piece of work in putting together this book, and I just wanted to read you the opening paragraph here. It's from Chapter 1 called An Early Golden Age. It says, one must step back from a detailed analysis of artifacts and buildings of Spanish Islam in order to see the sequence of development in its proper perspective. As Gilbert and Sullivan cautioned us in their light opera HMS Pinafore, things are never what they seem. Skim milk masquerades as cream. The mass of existing scholarship is valuable in terms of amount, but not necessarily in terms of precision. A fresh look at the Mosque of Cordoba requires that we go back in time to the Phoenician era of the 2nd and 1st millennium BC, and before that to a golden age, stretching back thousands of years when there thrived civilizations that attained high technological and aesthetic levels, which eventually transmitted their influences to Spain. Hard evidence for this is minimal, but circumstantial evidence is strong. Evidence and reason can explain some basic curious anomalies about the Mosque of Cordoba, as I shall try to illustrate. So that's how the book begins. And it has a fair amount of diagrams and pictures. And, of course, we reviewed some of the basic points in it. And I think it's just one more piece of evidence in this whole puzzle trying to understand history. Understanding that it might go back a lot farther than we think.
Yeah, I agree, and just even showing that there's so many things that we really don't know, even about things that we would consider fairly recent, being in the last 1,000 to 2,000 years.
Yeah. So that was a good book, and we'll be right back here.
Thanks again for listening to the Cosmic Influence. Don't forget to check out our other episodes available both on iTunes. And our website, www.binaryresearchinstitute.org.
And we're in the early planning stages for another conference next year. This one will be held at UCI in October of 2009. And we might have Marvin and many other guests there, but we'll let you know the details as they firm up over the next year or so.
And be sure to check the conference website, www.cpaconline.com, for for the latest updates on what we have going on with the conference.
Terrific. So thanks again for listening. And in the meantime,
bring on the higher ages.